to an Albion Roar special here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are with you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Well, this weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the last Albion game with Dean, and with that, also the anniversary of captain Gordon Greer lifting the League One trophy after Southampton failed to keep up. It was a magnificent season, and Gus Poyet's team played some of the best football we'd ever seen us play, and also saw to it that we would be kicking off in the Championship for our first season at the Amex. Joining myself today is Alan Wares, and also three of that brilliant team. Please welcome Captain Gordon Greer, Adam Elabd, and Gary Dicker. So, 10 years, guys, where did that go?
Time goes too quick, huh? Jesus.
What have you done in the intervening years then, if it's gone that quick?
Too much to go through, for sure. You haven't got long enough on this show, I can assure you. But yeah, it goes too quick. It does seem like a while ago, to be fair, but some good memories, you know?
Yeah, now, Adam, you're probably the original here. I mean, you're Brighton born and bred, playing for your hometown club. What did that mean for you?
Yeah, it was great, great times, you know, great times shared with a great, great group with some real good players in that dressing room and some good characters, you know. So we all got on really well and we put together an amazing season, you know, played some good stuff. And it was a privilege, really, to play in that team, you know. It was enjoyable. Everyone round for each other, made angles for each other, and we had a good team spirit. So it was a great season, a great few seasons. It wasn't just one season, because we had probably three or four where we really did play some good stuff, and everything came together for us. It was just unfortunate we didn't end up getting promoted again into the Premier League, which we just missed out on.
Yeah, because Adam, I mean, you made your debut in the 2003-2004 season for us, and you played actually the last league game of that season away at Wrexham before the playoff final. So, I mean, how did you feel about missing out on that?
When I missed that when I was younger, obviously it was disappointment. I still went along for the day. I was 17th man, and I was involved, I think, from Christmas time all the way through. And then I think I had a bit of a stinker against Wrexham away, and I missed the playoffs, but. You know, that's you win some, you lose some in football. You know, to be honest, I didn't have a great game against Wrexham, so I couldn't have any complaints for missing the bench. But, you know, it's the boys did the job and we got promoted on that day, you know.
And obviously, because of you playing that long, I mean, you had the longest experience with Dean out of the lot of you. And it was the longest, it was the biggest life raft in football's history, I think.
You know, with Dean served the club well. You know, I think they had... was it four promotions or five promotions during that time?
Yeah, in terms of trophies, it's the most successful period of our history.
Yeah, so you know we turned it into a little bit of a fortress, and it served the club well. Obviously, for other teams coming down, it wasn't great. The dressing rooms were portal cabins. They had a track around the pitch. Away fans had to go behind the goal and have a shot put circle or a net. In the way of their view, so they couldn't see the pitch properly. So it's a bit, it did feel for them, especially when it rains, there's no cover, you know. But we had some good memories there. I mean, in Gus's reign, they sorted the pitch out and made it really, really, really nice pitch for us to play on. We played some good stuff.
Yeah, a former player once told us, Adam, that when you were shooting for goal, you used to name for the hammer net and hope it would go in.
Wouldn't be far wrong, yeah. Something like that.
Gordon, we'll turn to you in a sec because you were ineffectively the new kid on the block by the time the team had got together for that last season at Withdean. So Gary, I mean, tell us about your first memories of arriving at the Albion, because obviously you weren't signed by Gus Poyet, but you know, your first memories of signing in for the Albion, but also your memories of when Gus Poyet turned up, because I mean, that must have been a sort of a real head turner in at that time.
Yeah, but my first memory was Adam Virgo clearing the stand that Withdean, to be honest with you. The first game we played, it was Jim McNulty. Obviously, had suffered his bad injury when he lost his kidney and ended up coming down. I didn't know anything about Brighton. Got lost looking for Geordie's Inn. Took me about 40 minutes to understand how to go underneath. Get back out the other side of the bridge. And then when I signed the first game, I remember ringing Jibby going, what is going on here? Because I'd come from a structured side at Stockport and playing a certain way. And just remember, first minute of the game, I'm sure it was Tranmere. We played, we drew 0-0, and it was the worst game of football I've ever been involved in. I just remember Vergs booting everything that came near him, whether it was on the pitch or off the pitch. And then Jimmy was like, ah, no, we'll be all right, we'll be all right. So that was my first impression. It was roasting as well. So, yeah. But then, obviously, we stayed up, and then we started the season bad. And then Gus came in, and I just remember being being over at the uni, and there hadn't even been whispers of him getting the job, to be honest with you. We came in and training, and I think Ads had backed me up, and it just came up on the yellow bar, Gus Poyet, Brighton manager. And we were all thinking, no chance. but then he first came in, and even his first meeting, I don't know if Ads can remember, he just set us all down in the canteen and just said, everyone's got a chance. This is how I'm playing. You all have a chance to get into the team. If you can't do what I'm asking, I'll get someone else to do it. You're going to enjoy training. You're going to enjoy how we play. And that was it, really. And then from day one, training. Because to be honest with you, before that, training was a bit of a shambles, but we had dressing rooms where people weren't playing. The dressing room was a bit all over the place. And he came in, and I'll never forget, we'd done 11v11, and Kevin McLeod. Kevin McLeod is telling everyone, oh, yeah, he's going to love me. I'm a ball player, this and that. And I'm not fit at all. I think he went in to see Gus and said, you know, I'm not fit. I need to lose 5 or 6 pounds or kilos or whatever and all that. And then we trained for about 2 weeks, and then we'd done 11v11. And I remember coming down the bottom steps to the training pitch, and he named 2 11s, and one was obviously the starting 11, but Macker wouldn't get off the left wing. And Seb Carroll was coming over going, like, Macker, get out of here. Like, he's like, nah, mate, I'm playing left wing. Get on the bench. Wouldn't get off the pitch. And then and then Gus had to come over and was like, come on, Macker, you're off doing some running because you told me you're not fit. So he just ran for the session. But he came in and he changed everything. I think Ad's touched on it. We couldn't get water down at that pitch. When I went down, everyone was like, no, I can't even get a sprinkler down there. He had a water tank down there within a few weeks. Pitches were brand new. He sorted the pitch up the other end. We stopped washing our kit. We were still washing our kit when I was there. First day he came in, he said, anybody takes their kit home, I'm fining you. We got our kit sorted, got a boot room, stuff, just little things like that. We started staying in better hotels. The buses were better. And our record was terrible at Whitney and then. And I remember him having a meeting saying, oh, do you want to stay over in a hotel the night before? He introduced pre-match again on a Saturday. So they came in and they flipped it on its head, to be fair, from the top to bottom. But they'd done it in stages on the pitch. And it got everyone on side straight away because, first of all, you're thinking he's trying to do his best for us. And he got us against them, really, mentality from day one against everyone else, thinking nobody wants to come here. And everyone thinks we're a bit of a shambles. And he changed it.
Adam, I mean, to the outside world, it was a massive appointment, and they really started to take notice of what we were doing because, you know, I mean, Brighton were kind of like bobbling under the line a little bit. You know, we'd had various ups and downs with Dean, but I mean, to you, I mean, Gus, he said that you're the best defender at the club.
Like Dixie said, when Gus came in, it was a massive. We almost had to look round and see if Jeremy Beadle was going to come out of the cupboard because like Gus is Chelsea legend, like coming to Brighton, and we were a bit of a shambles. Dixie again touched on it without going into too much, but it was a little bit of a circus before he came. The dressing room was a little bit, you know, it wasn't ideal. Well, it was a little bit out of control in terms of training standards weren't great. Standards, in general, just standards around the club weren't great. He'd come in, like Dixie said, changed a lot. It was in stages. He saw what was going on and changed it. And then I think there was one session, I think before Gordon got there, or it might have been when Gordon was there, I'm not sure, but he brought in Zola, Wise and Hasselbank for a session. The boys thinking like, we're training with Zola, Wise and Hasselbank and Gus Poyet, yeah? Like, you know, the standards just got raised, you know, and then he got rid of a few and brought in some quality, and then he continued to do that. You know, he kept revolving the doors, and the standard just got progressively better. You know, and we were still getting there, like, at the start of the season in 2010, 2011, the year we won it. We still weren't the finished article. We got better as the season went on, I think. And it just clicked. There was a game against Plymouth away, and we'd done okay. We started results-wise good, but we weren't that fluid. And then we played Plymouth away, and we won 2-0, I think.
Yeah.
And it was just a turning point where we passed them off the pitch, I think, and with Nooney, Benno and Kaz playing, you know, on fire. And from that moment on, we were pretty unstoppable, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Gary, I mean, Adam just said that the building was taking place, and that 9-10 season, in the January window, Inigo Calderon came in, Marcus Painter came in, and then that was in January, and then Kazenga, Luwalua, and Ashley Barnes came in on loan. And you know, the standard was just getting better and better and better, wasn't it?
Not only the standard, but the characters he brought in, like, were good lads who wanted to work hard, you know? That was the key. We had some, not saying we had the dressing room, the balance wasn't right, and there was some that kind of disrupted the harmony, you know, in terms of training standards. You know, it only takes one to not train properly, and it ruins a session. You know, so he revolved the door as well. He brought in some really good characters who wanted to, were hungry for success. You know, and you know, they raised the bar. You know,
Gary.
Yeah, I think you touched on it there, but I remember it was actually Chaz that told me about when Big Gigi was signing near the end of that season. He said we're signing the boy from Swindon and stuff like that. He's going to come in, and Chaz said he's going to be captain and stuff like that. And then you touched on standards. Big Gigi came in and changed the standards straight away of training. Even though it was slowly changing near the end of that season, we got a lot better defensively. I remember for the first 6 months, we just worked on defending. And we finished about 14th or 15th, I think. In the summer, he signed Big Gordon, and obviously Benno and all that had come in the year before, Nooney and Kaz, and Barnsley as well was a great signing. I'm sure Barnsley was on loan at Lewis or something at one stage, or one of the teams that
Eastbourne.
Were right down there.
Yeah, it was Eastbourne.
And they all came in, and I think there was a hunger there with everyone. I think with the players he signed, and even Gus and Tano and Charlie, they were all hungry to do well straight away. They're all at that stage. We're all at a good stage in our career, the staff and the players. And everyone, just even that pre-season, it was the hardest pre-season I've ever done. This first proper pre-season. Honestly, I couldn't walk. For 4 weeks.
Actually, Adam, I have to ask you, I mean, in regards to Ashley Barnes, I mean, has he ever lived down that 3 points we got in the FA Cup tie at Wrexham?
Don't tell me he said that was a great 3 points.
He said, yeah, it was a great 3 points.
Now, Barnsley, great guy, but he was lucky he was good at football, because he wasn't the sharpest tool, was he? But he's a great guy, yeah. Good player as well.
So, Gordon, all the while this stuff's happening, and you've got Gus rebuilding the team and rebuilding the club by the sounds of things, and it's Tony Bloom's first appointment, and the stadium is on its way, and we'll touch on the stadium as we go in through the show. But all the while this was going on, you were topping the table at Swindon. And you got to the playoffs. I mean, unfortunately for you, Swindon didn't make it to the next division. But bearing in mind where the Albion were, what was it that persuaded you to leave a team which had made the playoffs to go to a side that still didn't have its own stadium, its own facilities, and was at the time a lower half of the table side?
So the sort of thought process behind it was basically Gus. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really know much about Brighton, as did Dixie. When I played against Brighton at the Wythian, you know, it wasn't a stadium where you were looking forward to go to. It was sort of one of those stadiums you dreaded going to. It's like miles away on the coach, you're down near the coast, you're in a poor stadium, like there's no atmosphere. But when I spoke to Gus, he just wanted to play football in the way that I wanted to play it, essentially. And I thought it was a great opportunity for me personally at 29, where I hadn't really been in part of any team that wanted to pass the ball. I know that sounds crazy when you think, oh, surely every football team wants to pass the ball. But he had a clear vision, what he wanted to do. And I'll be honest with you, I just wanted to be part of it. So when the opportunity came up, and he sold the club to me, essentially, what we're going to do on the pitch.
Now, you didn't really have the greatest of exits from a Swindon, nor, for that matter, the greatest of entrances at Brighton. What happened?
What were you talking about?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Adam asked me to say that.
I remember it well. I remember it very well.
I'll tell you what, it was a nightmare start, I'll be honest with you. A nightmare start. And it was a nightmare ending for me at Swindon as well. I'll be honest with you, sometimes in football you sort of get yourself into situations and you sort of lose your head or whatever, but I didn't feel like that on either of them. It was purely just down to red mist at the time, or the tackle against Dion Button for Swindon in the playoffs, I thought was a good tackle. I took the ball, so I'm standing by that.
Okay, not going to argue.
Rochdale.
And home to Rochdale.
No, to be fair, that one was just silly. I was really keen to try and get. I had a small injury when I started at Brighton. I had a problem with my calf, and you know, the manager was great and the lads were great, and I just sort of fitted in straight away. But I was really keen to make a good impression. I know it sounds crazy now thinking how the impression went down, but I was really keen to make a good impression. And on the day, I was just trying to play my best, and I was het up. I was ready. I was tense for the game. And the guy came on and he just ran on and pushed me. And I just thought, I'm not having that. So I flung my elbow and backed up and I got sent off. It was a terrible start, to be honest with you.
The Albion Roar was still going back then, and we defended you massively on that show.
Well, no, to be honest, though,
because it was that was pre-VAR, and they wouldn't have still haven't got VAR in League One now anyway. But the ball wasn't in play; it was just a bit of shoving and going. There was wasn't really violent conduct.
Hang on. One, yes, it was. Two, it's the same rule then as it is now. It doesn't matter whether the ball's in play. If Gordon or anyone else is going to lamp someone, it's a red card. End of. What the thing shouldn't have been is, because the free kick hadn't been taken, it shouldn't have been a penalty. They should have just carried on then with the free kick. That's what it was. That was what we had the ump with. Yeah.
Did they give a penalty for it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he scored a penalty as well, didn't he?
A penalty as well, aye. So it was a really terrible start, I'll be honest with you, but sometimes in life these things happen and you just need to get up and go on with it and accept. So I took my punishment and I got on with it. But okay, red cards are obviously part and parcel as a defender. I'm sure Ad will back me up on that one.
Exactly the same thing happened to me when I signed for Bristol City. I did exactly the same thing, and everyone was thinking, Asim Malonga ran across me and I put my arm and elbowed him without even thinking about it. And I said, what are you thinking of? Do you know what? I don't even know. I just did it. No explanation. Sorry, boys.
But I mean, actually, I mean, Adam, I mean, just in your defence, I've got the stats here. Gordon was sent off three times for the Albion. You're only sent off once. So, you know.
Yeah.
What about you, Gary? How many times did you see red?
Yeah, I didn't see red at Brighton.
Only once for you.
I think it comes at eight.
Not here.
I've got sent up here. Off twice up here, I think, but one of them was a shambles, and then the lads talk about the red mist. The second one was horrendous. I could have got sent off a straight red for it. It was a second yellow. He gave a penalty against me. It wasn't a penalty, and then start of the second half, he didn't give us a handball, and then I just remember wiping the winger out. I didn't even go for the ball. I don't know why. I just wanted to take him out, and then got sent off. So yeah, it doesn't happen often, as the two boys says, but sometimes you do have that little switch, and nothing you do is going to stop it.
Well, let's go back to the beginning of that 2010-11 season and look at the recruitment. I mean, I'd love to hear what you've got to say about some of these guys that arrived. I mean, we've got Radoslav Kishisev, Matty Sparrow, Christian Baz and Bata Piedi arrived. Ashley Barnes made his switch permanent. Liam Bridcutt arrived. Kaz returned. Franz Sandaza popped in, and some bloke called Gordon was given the R band.
When you look back on that 2010-2011 squad, and especially with the way that, and I'm saying this to you, Adi, but also with the guy, knowing the guys are listening, is that you, with the way that not just the careers at Brighton, what they did afterwards, it's no wonder that we won the division. And not just won the division, we won the division in the way it did. Because we, as Brighton fans, can look back on that history and know when there's been rubbish teams and rubbish squads. You know, the late 90s, I mean, that squad was probably the worst we've ever had. But you look at that 2010-2011 squad, and one of the reasons that makes, I think, Brighton fans so happy was not that we just got promotion, but you could see that why we got promotion and how we deserved to get promotion, because just about everyone who was playing in that team, in that squad, has gone on to have a pretty decent, successful career. Hardly any have crashed and burned. So, you know, when you're talking about the recruitment, it's not surprising that we did as well as we did.
I think Gary touched on it. I think that we're all at a really good age. He recruited, I mean, Gordon was the captain at 29, was probably, apart from Kishishev, was one of our oldest players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 29 is also a good age to take the armband and lead us, you know what I mean? Because we were all quite green, really. We were quite young. So we were all coming into, we hadn't had our prime yet. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So he recruited well, and the age of everybody was good. So, you know, I think he brought in Chris Wood on loan. He was 19, and he was a little bit podgy at the time, and like literally it was still in his becoming a man. Do you know, he was still becoming a man, you know.
Yeah.
He brought in Ash very young, Dixie, Benno, Nooney, Kaz, Liam Bridcup, really young. It was the start of a lot of our careers, really.
Flip side, and then you brought in more players that raised the standard, like Gigi and stuff, that in training that you weren't able to get away with stuff, let alone with a group of players. The manager didn't need to do it, and he was quite clever with that. Obviously bringing Gordon here, as I said, as captain, and everybody didn't let it happen in training. So the manager didn't really have to nip it in the bud, really, ever. I think the lads have backed it up. Everyone ended up getting on each other if they weren't doing it right. You didn't need to. Training, tackles, everyone was on it. It was even the games on a Friday, if you weren't in the team, it was a great standard, and everyone wanting to be in the team. I think that was the key as well of that squad. Anybody could have played. You could have made 3 or 4 changes every week, and it didn't weaken the team. So you made good signings all around, to be fair. And I'm not sure when Casper and Big Peter came in as well, but they were good characters in the dressing room as well. They were a little bit older. They were quite chilled out as well, which kind of helped us as well. We had a good mixture of different nationalities as well. First time with Calde and stuff like that coming in. And the dressing room was brilliant. The best one I've been in by far.
Gordon.
I've never been in a dressing room that good that everyone's got on, where there's usually 5 or 6 will usually get on, and like any workplace, but we just had we had great times in that dressing room. I used to love coming in every day. Somebody, no matter what you've done or what you wore in or everyone's gear used to, I'm sure I screwed the ads boxer shorts up for a good 6 months in that dressing room. I used to change Peter Brezovan's own hook. Remember, he used to take his hook off the thing. He bought his own hook in B&Q. But just stuff like that. We used to go for lunch every Wednesday together. Just little stuff guards brought in and stuff like that. Everyone going out together. Used to stick our cards in, see who paid for lunch and stuff like that. Just little things, but even nights out and stuff like that. We had some great times, even trips away as well. It was a great dressing room. It was the best I've been in.
So where was it you were going in town?
In town, back in the day. I'm sure we used to go to that Lola Low, didn't we, and Pitcher and Piano, and I'm not sure what it's called. Was it the one beside Pitcher or beside Lola Low? What was that place called, lads?
Madame Geisha.
Yes, that was in there.
Dirty Blonde.
Yeah, yeah. So Ads and Tommy used to think they ran the place in the town, you know, get one on the door.
For those of you listening to this, Adam Alab's face just completely lit up when he was saying
Matt Sparrow only went out on fresher night anyway.
that was Liam Dickinson, wasn't it?
He's another one like Spadge, and I know Nav's got injured that season, but they were good characters, great characters as well in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Gordon, did you, I mean, it was, so whatever Gary saying all about this, about the sort of like the camaraderie and the fun that you had. Did you ever have to play the role of, or were you ever even given the role of Sergeant Major, or were you just misbehaving as much as the rest of them?
No, I think I don't know why, but I've always said that when it comes to football, I've always had a bit of an edge. When it comes to on the pitch, away from the pitch, I couldn't care less, and I'm very chilled out. But when it came to football and the training pitch and stuff, I was always a bit of a moaner, if you like. I was always like trying to get the boys to like to sort of do what was expected of them and try and keep standards high. And Gus had a real sort of way of playing, and as a player within that dressing room, all of us took our own responsibilities to try and keep training high. But as Dixie and Adam mentioned, like the team spirit was unbelievable. You know, sometimes when you're involved in it, you don't sort of take a look around and appreciate how lucky you are until you're sort of retired footballer, looking back, looking at it, thinking what I would do to live that year again or that couple of years, because there were so many good lads. I like to laugh and I joke like everybody off the training pitch, but I was a bit of a sergeant major, if you like, on the pitch, because that was the type of person that I was. I just loved winning, and I just wanted to win, whether it was training, whether it was matches. I just wanted to win, and that was just the way that I've always been. Yeah. And I'm still like that now when I play five a-sides. but I'll never change. I'll go into play five a-sides on a Wednesday night, and I'll be going through people left, right, and centre trying to win. So that's just the way I am.
Nothing changes.
I mean, there was an interview with Coolday in the Argus a week or so ago, and he did say that you like to have a good moan at him because he was playing too far forward, in your opinion.
That wasn't just my opinion, by the way. No,
I should point out he scored 8 goals that season.
I know. To be fair, Calder was brilliant. I mean, as I said, I think the boys, I mean, sometimes, like Dixie obviously knew what I was like when I was at Kilmarnock, and I think I was a bit over the top when I went back up, because I was expecting standards to be better, obviously being used to Brighton and all that. But the year that I went in with Caldy, I was just trying to like sort of take the manager's tactics and sort of be on the pitch and sort of do it that way. And Caldy was so high at times, it was hard to pass on the ball. So
no wonder he got 8 goals, didn't he? He's playing centre forward.
No, he scored 8 goals, he could have had 30.
Yeah. let's talk about the on-pitch stuff, because you know, like I said, we're here mostly talking about that season. Now, we're not going to do it necessarily game by game, but there obviously were a few highlights. But at the beginning of the season, now we started off, we had a good run. I think we had one defeat in the first sort of 10, 12 games. And the first one we want to talk about, really, I guess, is the one at the end of September, which ultimately put us at the top of the table. It was the first time we made it to the top of the table. It was the home game against Oldham.
Yeah, September the 25th it was.
But yeah, famously, Sandaza whacked it home from 25 inches. Interestingly, I wonder if anyone can remember the first goal from that game, because I'll be buggered if I can. But when you talked about the Plymouth game just now, which I think was the week before, when we went to the top of the table, did you have any inclination that we could actually maintain that stance for the rest of the season?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I remember Gus saying in the dressing room, you know, in here we expect to stay at the top, expect to win it, and don't go shouting the rooftops, but from inside. I just knew, yeah. I think I knew what we nearly played all the teams by then. We were starting to play. I'd only watched back some of the highlights there the other week of the games that season. And especially, see, when a game like that goes in your favour, and I was just looking around, I remember, as soon as we won that game, I remember actually Franz scored, yeah. And you do, and I don't know why, I just looked around and I just knew that what we had in the dressing room and the way we were playing, I watched back, probably Gordon, I know assists and stuff weren't massive down there, but I've seen some of the games. Gordon had probably more assists than anyone that year. When you only look back at the games, and he weren't big, wasn't big back then, you know, assists and all that. We were battering teams. We should have beat teams by more, double figures in some games. The chances we were creating, our strikers, I think they all nearly got 20 goals each. They all could have got 30 goals each that season. And games like that where you probably aren't on at the best, and we weren't playing the best, but we always knew that we had enough to beat anyone, whether it was a first minute or a last minute. And games like that always stick out last minute. And I remember Big Fran scoring. He wasn't the prettiest footballer, but he used to come on and do the business and score the goals. In fairness, lads would back me up. We used to do a boxing a Friday, and Charlie used to always say three ugliest, and he always used to pick Fran, and he used to be gone. Crazy. He'd be like, Fran, fighting, and he used to be like, nah, what, me? And
he couldn't believe it. He's like, what? The ugliest?
I don't know what you're talking about. He was a dude.
After rocking up in his white jeans.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. This show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has sent us another shirt of the week, which may be familiar to one of you, I suspect. So, Dixie, can you just describe the shirt to me first?
It's white with a bit of red. Terrible sponsor is it? I don't even know what it is. It's OKI. I'm trying to look at the crest. I'm thinking it's Clyde, but I could be wrong.
Well, I don't know. Does anyone know anything about Clyde here?
Certainly do.
Is it Clyde? We played Clyde this year. Is it Clyde?
Absolutely no idea.
Is it? We played them in the cup. That's how I knew this year. We played them in the League Cup. When you're playing the little group stages, and when we went to Clyde, the crest and stuff, that was the only reason I kind of noticed it was the crest. But
okay, Gordon, do you want to tell us a bit more about this shirt then? This
was a shop that I had basically for the first year that I played professional football. So I got this. I'm assuming, where did you get this shirt again?
It's from oldfootballshirts.com. It's on his it's on his website.
All right, okay. So I was obviously at Clyde that year. That was my first year in professional football, and this was the shirt that we wore. I must have been 18, 19, roughly, at that time.
Okay, that ages it about right.
It's ancient, as they say.
So shall I tell you what Phil's got to say, and then you can jump in if you've got any comments on it. So... here is your shirt of the week, he says. And I trust one of your guests has identified it correctly. I think he's even signed it. There's a clue for you there, Gordon. This is the 1999 to 2001 home shirt of Clyde FC, who currently play in Scottish League One. Their nickname is the Bully Wee, and they play at 8,086 capacity Broadwood Stadium, which was built in 1994. Just 4 years before Gordon made his debut there. They were formed in 1877 as a private members club, more akin to a golf club than a football club. Their members not only played football, but also competed in rowing competitions. Did you ever do any rowing competitions, Gordon?
No, I never even knew that, to be honest with you.
They've won the Scottish Cup 3 times, most recently in 1958, and their highest ever finish in the top flight was third place in 1966-67. The club is 100% owned by its supporters, and after financial problems in 2004, which almost led to the demise of the club and the formation of the Supporters Trust. The Trust has financed the signing of a number of players, including Tom Brighton in 2005. The Clyde Supporters Trust also run their own fans team called Bully Wee United. Bully Wee United were the official supporters team of Clyde and represent the club in the Internet Football Association League. What? With clubs with matches played on Saturday mornings. Matches are normally against the supporters teams of the opposition facing the first team on the same day. Bully Wee United is unique as in that most Scottish supporters teams, they operate a strict policy that only Clyde supporters may play for the team. Players must attend a minimum number of Clyde games over a season. Of course, there are a couple of Brighton links. Former captain Gordon Greer made over 200 appearances and 5 goals between 2010 and 2006. As for player-manager link, Billy Reid made 70 appearances for the Bully Wee between 89 and 91. And was then manager for 2004 to 2005. And he is now, of course, Graham Potter's assistant at the Amex.
And you can find that shirt and 110,000 others at oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks as ever to Phil Shelley for sponsoring the Albion Roar. If you have a few shekels left over, I'm sure you don't, but if you do, Radio Reverb is a community-based radio station. It does actually have to operate largely on thin air. So if you do feel like giving it a couple of shekels over, just head to radioreverb.com and hit the donate button, and anything you could offer would be absolutely brilliant. But after that game, let's move into October, which was...
Well, I just want, before we do move into that, I just want to talk about another game, which is, I mean, there was an awful lot of controversy about this, and we still talk about it even now. Football supporters never hold grudges, as you know. We're talking about the Bournemouth game, where there was a penalty given, Kaz scored a fantastic goal, but Bournemouth were awarded the penalty for a handball by Steve Fletcher outside the area.
It was meant to be
Tommy Elphick. I mean, just to give the officials a clue, one of them had long sleeves and one of them didn't. Yeah. And short sleeve person.
Gordon, I'd imagine that most of your team wanted to rip the linesman's head off after that, didn't you?
Oh, definitely. By that point, we're all as angry as me on the pitch, apart from Dixie. He was cool as a cucumber.
That came with age. I got angry as I got older. We flipped.
You know, how do you actually sort of get through, or do you just sort of like shrug your shoulders and say it's part and parcel of football once you've admittedly ripped the linesman's head off?
To be honest, see stuff like that. See, at the time we were playing, like, genuinely, like, I know it's easy to look back, we have like fond memories, but we were playing so well. I genuinely think at the time, like, we don't really see the replays and all that, so you just sort of accept the decision to a point. But we were playing so well at the time, you just think, we'll get another opportunity, let's just work another opportunity, let's just keep going, keep with the game plan, and hopefully we'll get the results that we wanted.
But I mean, after that started to come, I mean, the football was getting better and better, and
there was a swagger,
the relationships between everyone on the pitch, everyone knew where everyone was going to be, and that was like completely a case in point in the demolition of Charlton at the Valley.
Go on, who wants to go first on that, because for us that was fun. What was that like for you guys?
I was going to say that I actually came back for injury around that period of time, and I played against I remember it so clearly because I'd missed a bit of football, obviously, with the sending off, and I had a bit of a calf problem. And we were playing Peterborough and Charlton. I don't know which one came first.
Charlton.
So Charlton first, and the manager said, like, these are going to be up there. The next week, basically, is going to dictate how well we can do this season. Both teams are really dangerous. They were two good sides. And I remember getting back into that game after injury, and we absolutely bossed it. We bossed it from start to finish. Like, the football we were playing was excellent. We controlled the ball. The lads were on fire. And then we backed it up. I think it was 3-0. And then we backed it up the midweek game against Peterborough, and we beat them as well. So they two games for me was at the point where I thought, nobody's going to catch us this season unless we do it ourselves.
Let me refresh your memory. It was 4-0 at Charlton, and then the Peterborough game was a 3-0 away win. One of the few games I missed, and I'm led to believe it wouldn't have been an injustice if it was 8.
It was unbelievable. No, it was just, as I say, that week, I think for us as players, given like we'd sort of been doing really well and we were up near the top of the league, but for that week sort of made us look at it in a different light. Like, we felt like we were, you know, right in amongst it, and we'd get a right good chance of winning that league at that point. And we'd played two of the so-called better teams, and we absolutely battered them both away from home. And it was just a great week.
After the Charlton, I remember, obviously they came out and said it was the biggest game, didn't they, this season?
It was going to be their cup final.
Yeah. And I remember Macca was up front. I don't know, you remember. I remember Gus just saying to Casper, first 10 minutes, just put your foot in the ball. Just let them run around. Basically, suck them in. And Casper's like, what? Just put your foot in the ball. And I'll never forget it. Everyone was booing. He just stood with the ball at his foot. Didn't move. And I know he used to say it to the boys at the back anyway, but I'm sure they had a man sent off as well. But we battered them before that.
Lee Tomlin got sent off.
But as Gars was saying, even you just knew. Even the Charlton game, we should have beat them by about six. That day, we battered them, massive pitch. And you just knew. When you're in that moment, I think, as a team, and everyone was playing well, everyone was on it, even if we did make three or four changes. And sometimes we used to go to a diamond and stuff like that. And in games away from home, we'd mix it up and go with two strikers. Everyone used to moan you'd only play one striker, or else we'd play Barnsley on the left of a tree. And we could mix it up how we played. But, you know, them two games, I don't think they could get near us.
I mean, the game against Peterborough was on Halloween, and it's become known as Nightmare in London Road. And
from a fan's point of view,
hopefully he'll join us shortly. But Elliot Bennett that day was absolutely on fire, and I mean, we missed the penalty, we missed countless. But I mean, talk to me about before he joins us, Elliot Bennett.
Benno that season was brilliant. To be fair, he played central a good bit. He played out wide. He gave us something different. Then obviously we had Kaz and then Nooney came in, were out and out wingers, and Benno, I'm sure Benno played right back a few games, the odd game that season as well, and he had so many assists that year from set pieces, deliveries and shooting from long range, and he offered us something different. He'd run in behind, as I think Gord touched on there, we could play short, but we also knew when to spin it and get along, and Benno had great energy in there. Obviously, it wouldn't be my strength running in behind. So he gave us a different dynamic to the team. And I think we had such a good balance, whichever way we played, and players like him. He was brilliant and he used to work so hard, Benno, as well. And he was always good in the dressing room as well.
No, he was superb. I mean, as Dixie touched on there, like he was a great sort of character to have in your team, because he was so hardworking. If the manager, the thing I would say about Benno, he took instruction really well. So if the manager asked him to do something, like he played him in a few different positions, but he always done what was asked of him. And I think that's what made him play as much as he did that season, because as Dixie said, with Kaz and with Nooney, Benno was more adaptable. He could play right back, he could play off the front, he played in midfield. And he took all our set plays, so he was... You know, it was excellent for like a dead ball situation, and he had a great season. It was a real pleasure to play in that team. There was some brilliant players, great characters as well.
Yeah. Now, Adam, I mean, shortly after that, firstly, Chris Wood arrived, but shortly after that was a game away at St Mary's, and Nigel Atkins, the Southampton boss at the time.
No, he said, Nigel Atkins was asked, and what do you think of Brighton's chances this season? And he said, well, they'll be fine if they can keep up with us. That's probably about three or four matches worth of team talks done there and then, isn't it?
Yeah, I think going into that game, that was a Tuesday night game. I'm sure it was a night game.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Down there. As well, you look at their team, they had Lambert, Schneiderlin, Fontaine, all them playing.
Lallana,
yeah. So they were red hot favourites to go up. They probably should have won the league with the budget they had, the wages they were paying, everything. And it did, yeah. It got under their skin, to be honest with you. I remember I'm not sure who we played after that game. And I remember I said something in the press after it about Nigel Atkins. And I remember Gus pulling me and saying, nah, shut up. Let him eat his words at the end of the season, basically. Don't be saying that. Wait. But even that night, we should have beat them. Big Woodsy missed his pen. Seen he scored there a few weeks ago. I was thinking, any chance you should have beat them that night? Because it was Kelvin Davies, I think, it was in goal. And he made a good save. But we enjoyed stadiums, going to them big grounds. Gordon touched on it. It didn't faze us, even though they probably had the bigger names and the bigger budget and stuff like that. We enjoyed it, and it did, yeah. It pissed a lot of us off, to be honest, because we had been up there for so long. He'd just come in because they had sacked Pardew, didn't they, not so long. And he came in and he probably thought they were going to steamroll it and win it. So, of course, it added, definitely added to it.
You've got some memory, Dixie, remembering some of the... I can't remember the penalty.
I've always got a good... Yeah, I've got a good memory of our stuff.
Well, the old Rochdale game.
No, just like you said, he missed a penalty and it was 0-0. I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't have told you the scoreline in that Southampton game.
It was 0-0, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
It wasn't the most exciting game.
Nah.
Adam, Southampton, there was an incident where which could only be described as a scene from a butcher's shop window, which was your leg.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Remember that. You were playing that day, weren't you?
Yeah, I think I was, actually. I thought my career was over. I was genuinely having a panic up. But I've still got the scar here, look.
Go on. Yuck.
So, from there to there.
Yeah. For those of you who don't have super reverb vision, because we're not going to put this up on YouTube if we can help it, Adam's just showing about a 6-inch scar just above his knee, which, like I say, it does look as though it was done by an abattoir rather than whoever the doctor was at the time.
It was.
What happened? What happened with it? Someone's studs went through it.
I think me and Cowdy both stood for to block a shot from Ricky Lambert, and I think it was either Cowdy's or Ricky Lambert's standing foot, like just caught me on the inside of the knee. But then the pressure, obviously, it just cut my skin. And obviously, like a standing knife, really, just zipped all the way up. It was painful.
Yeah, it did look as though it smarted a little bit. I think Ricky Adams saw you a few days later and said, you know, that was just a graze. But the rest of us saw it, and it really was like,
It was... It smarted
a bit.
It did, but do you know what? I got so lucky because it was just skin, and it was just the skin and the fat layer. None of the muscle was damaged. So, although the muscle was visible, you could see it, like all the fibers in your muscle were there, so you could see it. But actually, do you know what? It looked a lot worse than what it was. It was a case of just stitching it up and waiting. I think it was 12 days, 13 days. For the stitches and the scar to knit, and I was back pain, so it was very, very fortunate, you know.
Sure.
We had Malcolm Stewart on talking us through that, and Malcolm's he still is. He's a brilliant lad, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good guy. Good guy. I always remember. He's a top guy, and he was in that proper, you know, great servant for the club, you know. I always remember Rooney as well in the...
I remember that dog. I remember Kevin McLeod used to do a nice trick with the oil down there. I won't go into details.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's suitable for the show.
He used to put oil everywhere and the dog would be licking toes, everything.
Oh. when did the Albion Raw get so gross?
Yeah, this is true.
Move on to Christmas? Because
let's move on to that game at home to Charlton. Then, I mean, Calday and Charlton's his Albion career is littered with mostly scoring against them, but it was a game where he also got sent off. And I mean, we weren't on the greatest run at that particular moment in time, but to get that draw was massive in the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, no. The Oldham game at home, when Fran scored, and then this game as well, when we didn't get beat and we were down to 10 men, I think after 8 minutes, did we win the game 1-0?
No, it was 1-1.
One each.
A penalty in the first minute.
Yeah, and Muzza scored. I'm sure it was Muzza that scored, wasn't it?
Yeah, a goal that was the sort of goal that.
Kind of hooked it over the keeper's head.
Yeah, it was kind of like an Ibra goal.
But Adam, what does that game mean to you then? Because like you say, you called it season defining.
It was almost, it was another indication, another massive sign that we were going to win the league. There was nothing stopping us in my mind. And that was the feeling, the momentum was building. Everyone had that feeling coming into training every day. We're winning, we're going to win. We're going to lift the trophy this year. And that day when everything kind of goes against you, you go down to 10 men after 8 minutes against one of the top teams. A team that was probably had a bigger budget than us at the time and had some really good players. We still played really well. And actually, the game was 50-50, but we had 10 men for 82 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in possession stats and in shots, I think everything was 50-50. So which should never really happen if you're playing against 11, you know. And we didn't nick a draw. We got a draw, and
yeah,
another indication we're a good side. We're a good side, and the feeling was we're going to go and win the league.
Yeah. I think touching on ads talking about that, and I think they'll back me up. I think that pre-season when we went to Portugal, I remember we'd done 2 days of training of playing 10 against 11. That's the first time and last time I've ever done it with a manager. We done 2 solid days of this is how we play. We have 10 men, or if we have 9 men. And it was the first time, because it happens in football, and you don't actually coach it half the time. You might do overload, or you might do sessions where, but you don't actually coach what you do with the ball, what shape you're going to play with it. Everyone just usually does a flat 4-4-1. We went to a diamond. I remember him pulling Kaz and Nooney and saying, if you two can play in the top of the diamond, if we get down to 10 men, you two are coming off. I remember him doing it that day out in training. Two lads were like, all right, happy days. he used to put Benno at the top of the diamond. Used to let the ball go wide. And we used to then obviously counter-attack and have the overload in the middle of the pitch. So when it happened in them games and it happened before, we didn't actually panic. We didn't worry about it. We still had the same way of playing. We just used to give up space out wide. But I haven't played under a manager that's done that since, to be honest with you.
That's so true. I mean, I think when we went down to 10 men, or they went down to 10 men, we had a plan. And it's not often that you're on the football park. And I suppose the biggest credit I could give Gus at that time is that we went onto the pitch, we knew exactly what was expected of us. If they went down to 10 men, we went down to 10, we knew what was expected of us. In possession, out of possession, we knew what was expected of us. And that was just like, as a footballer, it's great to know that. You know, you're going onto the pitch knowing everybody knows their job. And we, as I say, we didn't panic, and we were solid that day. And as I'd said, it was a great result for us.
I mean, are those sessions, I mean, do you think, I mean, Gus himself was, when he was playing, wasn't a particular stranger to a red card. And you've seen the Uruguayan players over the ages, they've got a certain style of play, to put it, and an aggressive style of play. Let's put it that way. Do you think that it comes from that upbringing he's had?
I remember, I don't know what game we played. It was Brentford away. I don't know if you were there. Gee, I think Ads might have been the season before, and we won 1-0. I came on in like the 82nd minute, and they were having a counter attack, and I dragged someone down, and then I just came into the dressing room, and first thing he went unbelievable, and I thought he was obviously going to talk about it, and he went taking a yellow card, and I liked that side of it. Everyone thought we were nice footballers, but we also had an edge about us, and I know the two boys had an edge, but he was the first manager kind of with me. It was like, well, yeah, take a foul, take a yellow card, do what you got to do to win the game of football. And it's not cheating, and it's not this, it's playing the game. And we had a bit of everything about us in that team, and they brought that side into us. They weren't just, oh yeah, they're obsessed with clean sheets. If we conceded a goal, if you slid in the box, you gave away a penalty. I remember Crofty gave away a penalty at home to Barnsley. We were 5-0 up, and I thought they were going to kill him. And we can see this. So they brought stuff into the game, and it wasn't just all nice and stuff like that. We had a bit of a ruthless side against us, and people probably call it the dark arts of the game or whatever like that. But it was the first time a manager was like, not encouraging you to fail, but you do what you have to do to win the game of football.
Because the thing is that we had a few years ago, we had Charlie Oakley on the show, and he was saying, obviously, when Gus came in and Charlie was put into the management team, he was saying that Gus came in with Tano and they had their ideas about what they wanted to do. And I think even Charlie was mildly resistant, saying, this is not how you get out of the third division. And I'm sure you guys were, you know, I know we're going back to sort of like, you know, before, you know, just when he started. But as you got used to him, you realised that actually these ideas were kind of not exactly revolutionary. Well, they probably were revolutionary. And touching on what Gordon said there about sort of playing the 10v11 and looking out for every situation. Adam, you know, this probably at the time would have been unheard of in the third tier.
The way that we played?
Yeah.
Or the way that we played, I think Roberto Martinez put together a team that played similar for Swansea. But yeah, there was a lot of people doubting the whether we could basically be as fluid and play and be effective, because in League One, you can't play that way, apparently. You know, that was the opinion. In League One, you have to fill your team with 6'4", 6'5" players that basically get it in the box and compete and fight and scrap. And it got us playing a really good way of playing. But that was a progress. And going back to the fouling thing, one of his main gripes with us when he first came was,
we don't make enough fouls. We played Leeds United at home and we got beat 3-1, I believe. Not the championship season. And he said, how many yellow cards? We had maybe one yellow card and we've been beaten 3-1 at home. And then the foul count for Leeds was 3 times more than ours. Basically, we were too nice. It's like when they were going to break on us, we let them break. We didn't take the legs and get everyone behind the ball. So we played some really good football, which was against the grain and against the mould. But he also got us compact and a little bit nastier and a little bit more streetwise, really.
Yeah. No, I mean, moving on from that, Adam. I mean, this is probably more important to you at this stage. Is it was just after that Charlton game, going into the new year, that we started selling season tickets for the Amex. So, and the dream was becoming a reality. So, for you, like I said earlier, you're a local lad. I mean, how important was that to you?
Yeah, it was. That was the dream. Obviously, like, I think I was 13, 14 years old, and the plans were put to the fans, and the dream of Falmer was initially put forward. And it was, I think I was 26 when we won the league. So I didn't play in the Amex until I was 27, so it was a good time after, you know. And to have that feeling after the Charlton game, thinking that we could be playing in the championship in the new stadium, was a great feeling. Obviously, then doing it and achieving it, buzz was incredible, you know, because the stadium really did take the club on.
Like Gordon, when you're in training and you're seeing this great big behemoth being built behind you, I mean, you're thinking, yeah, I'm going to be playing there. Hope I'm going to be playing there next year. How does that feel for you?
To be fair, the plans when I joined the club were all presented to us. Like, you know, this, we're playing at the Lifting, but we've got plans to move. This is the stadium. It's going to be a year away. This is the way it's going to look, and this is how it's going to feel. And then obviously when I signed, they'd already started building it. But gradually, I will be honest with you, like before I came to Brighton, I didn't really appreciate the size of the club, the fan base, and how nice the stadium was going to be. I thought they were just going to build a new stadium in Falmer. I didn't really appreciate how nice this thing was going to be and how big it was going to be at the time. And it was, once you started to see it go up, you started to realise this is a proper stadium. And the fan base that we had at the Withdean, I want to touch on, because every time I came down as an opposing player, the Withdean was like empty. It was like, you know, it had no atmosphere, it was soulless. But that season that we went up, it was actually all right. I mean,
I loved it. Yeah, I was the same.
We had a good set of supporters, and albeit you could only fit a certain amount of people in, like, we filled out the stadium, we're getting loads of fans into that ground. They made a bit of an atmosphere, and the pitch was good. So I look back on that last season as one of my favourite seasons, actually, just for the way we played. It was just a great team, but then obviously moving to the Amex is a different level. And as I say, I didn't really appreciate the size of the club until we got to the Amex and we started to fill the Amex out.
That's all we've got time for at the moment, so you have to join us for the second part. So in the meantime, thank you to Alan Wares, thank you to Gordon Greer, to Adam Elabd and to Gary Dicker. And so join us for part two, where we'll also be joined by Elliot Bennett as we look at the run-in and go back to Gordon Greer lifting the trophy on that last game at Withdean. Thanks for listening to this one. We'll see you for the next one. Just to admit one mistake that can be hard to take. I know we've made them fall, but only fools come back for more. Being the fool I am, I figured in all your plans, darling. Your perfume letters didn't say that you'd be leaving any day.
proud to say I let love slip away. Now I'm the one who's crying, I'm the fool there.